Thank you. So if you were talking to some group of Christians like this, or maybe even young people, and you said, upon what basis should you make your decisions, what would you say? Give me your pat answer to that. What is the pat answer? Upon what basis should you make your decision? How should you go about making your decisions as a young person, as you look, you know, forward to your life and then the various decisions you're going to make? What would you say to them if you had maybe an elevator talk to give them?
How does God fit into it, your decision?
Okay, I always ask, how does God fit in? Okay, good. What else, man?
Remember all the things that your father said.
Remember all the things that your father said. Okay. Not, well, some percent.
Not my father.
I know.
My mic. Okay, well, those are good. What's the pat answer that we would say? Read your Bible, right? Follow the Bible. Of course, that becomes then somewhat of a platitude. You know, we should read our Bible and, okay, good. You know, do what Jesus says. Okay, good. What the Bible says, those are what we call platitude, Kevin. It's too easy an answer. We know that we're old enough in here to have made plenty of decisions in our life, that it's more complicated than that in most cases. We would love for all of our decisions just to be kind of spelled out in Scripture so we could just go there and say, okay, this is what I need to do because this is what God wants me to do. But those aren't the ones that trouble us. They're the ones that... are more, that don't have that kind of answer, that kind of, at least pat answer. Here are the decisions that we find in Ruth 1, and I might have left something out of it, but these are the obvious ones. Elimelech decides to move to an enemy state, Moab, due to the famine. Okay, so he made that decision. We're going to come back to these in a minute and ask whether these were wise decisions and all that, but Mahlon and Chilion decide to marry Moabite women. Naomi, after Elimelech's death, decides to move back to Bethlehem. Naomi decides to urge daughters-in-law to go back to Moab. Orpah decides to return to Moab, where she had a TV show, as we know. So. I think that's the way it was read the first time. Ruth decides to stay with Naomi and her God, Naomi's God. And then I put this in bracket. Naomi decides to view her plight as God's doing, because she does mention that a couple of times in verse 20:21. Now, the question, here's the question that we have as we read this. I think these are the kinds of things that go through our mind if we're reading this. Were these decisions wise, God honoring, spiritually or physically driven? Look at them again and kind of decide, you know, try to put yourself in the place of these people making these decisions. Were they wise decisions? What's the problem with the question? With this question?
Well,
you can back up if you want.
Okay.
Let me just say this. The problem with these are somewhat speculative, right? In many of these. Okay.
Yeah. So these two slides, all three of the slides that you've shown so far has reminded me of something that typically derails me whenever I have a decision to make. I need to contemplate the urgency versus the importance of what's at stake.
Right.
Because often, if not always, what is the most important gets pushed out of the way due to what's urgent, or what we view as urgent. And so if I were to talk to my kids or anyone about decision-making, is to always don't forget what's most important. Just because something else is urgent doesn't mean that that you can just forget what is important and also long-term. Because usually the urgent is always short-term. So
right.
I think that weighing those things, and I think that as we answer the questions that people, the decisions that people made, you can see when they did something out of urgency, oh, we're starving, we better run to Moab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And that's a really good point, because we, that's something we all face, and we tend to probably, we can all confess to making the urgent decisions and setting the important aside. Is it important to read your Bible?
Yes.
How often do we go through a day? And we know that. We know that's important. That's critically important for us to stay in. But we get to the end of the day, and we say, wait, you know, I did all these other things. And so, I mean, that's one of the complicating factors. We're going to look at some others, but as you look at these things and you think of these three questions, I tried to think of just a few questions, these three, to try to measure what these people did. I mean, we don't know, as we spoke in the very first class probably, we don't know exactly what motivated Elimelech to move. Not everybody moved, obviously. Not everybody went to anywhere else. He decided to go to Moab. Was that wrong? There's no commentary on that. We have nothing in the Bible that tells us or makes a judgment about what he did. These are things that, but it was a decision that he made at the time. Maybe he's out of urgency or panic. Who knows? Maybe he thought that was in the best interest of his family. I think we can sit back with 20/20 vision and say, well, you know, it doesn't seem like a very faithful move. It doesn't seem like a move that showed a lot of faith, but we're making that judgment. Is there value in making those kinds of judgments when we're not making them conclusionary judgments or not judging Elimelech himself and his particular? Is there some value in thinking about it that way or no? Jeff?
I don't think there's value in being dogmatic, but it helps us to go through that exercise to teach ourselves to make decisions, because when you're in the moment of making a decision, you know, you're kind of under pressure then to make a decision, and this way you kind of play it out in advance in your head, and you know, it may inform something you do later, and if you hadn't gone through this exercise, you wouldn't have that preparation.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I like the fact that there's not any conclusion given about that or any judgment made about that, that we have no information on that. But it does help. That's the first thing that occurred to me when I read this. Maybe not the first time I read Ruth, but certainly the, you know, 14th or 15th time. You know, I said, wait, why did he go? And not everybody went, and you know, shouldn't he have been trusting God? Well, maybe so. What were Mahlon and Chilion going to do? They married foreign women. We get over to Ezra and Nehemiah. They're making them get rid of those women. I mean, what's the deal with that? Why did they make that decision? It's a pretty easy answer to that. That decision was based upon Elimelech's decision, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Elimelech decided to move to Moab. Now you got these two boys who want wives. What's their choice? They're Moabite women, but they're Jews still. They got to know what's wrong with that. Should they have just pushed that off? Again, we don't know. There's no, unless they're all the death of these three men is a judgment on them, and I suppose some would make that point. We don't know. We do know what the law said. We know what, you know, that he could have read their Bible. Oh, we can't marry these. We better go back to Bethlehem and find someone. Those kinds of things. Naomi decides to move back. That makes sense. There was some assets there. Or at least she had heard that they're being fed, right? There was some, the famine had lifted. So she decided to do that. That makes all the sense. Well, let's see that. How about Naomi decides, I know this came up, I don't think I was teaching, but Naomi decides to urge daughters-in-law to go back to Moab. So what is that?
The other slide for that question, for that statement, Ruth decides, there was it wise, God-honoring, spiritually, or physically driven?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one that I can say was wise, because it was the God, it's Yahweh. This is the only one where I can say so far there's no speculation.
No speculation.
16, verses 16 and 17. Mm-hmm. It was wise. It's the one true God. She's willing to give up her life. The Lord do so and me more, how the rest of us goes. So it was honoring God, mm-hmm. and it's spiritually driven.
Yeah, good point. I mean, that. So when we look at...
The other one, there's the speculation, I think, in all the rest, but that's...
Pretty much, yeah.
The first,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, Naomi, going back to Bethlehem, we understand that part of it. She had, you know, at least some distant relatives there. But yeah, you're right. So Naomi urging her daughter-in-laws to go back raises what question? What does that decision, what questions does that raise? Or...
Motives.
Concerns. What?
It makes me wonder about her motives.
Oh,
okay. I mean.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Why would you want to send your daughters-in-law back to Moab when there's a better place, Bethlehem, and the God that you serve is there?
Yeah, back to a pagan country versus urging them to go with her, stay with her, to go. Now, Christie's thought, and I even have it written in my Bible with a question mark. Is this a test? You know, is she testing him? Because if she's going to be committed to her pagan gods even in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, when she went back, who knows? Again, we don't know. That's the interesting thing about this book. We're not given these judgments, but it does make us think about this process of deciding. And her saying, you go back. Obviously, life will be better for you back in your native country, right? That there's a very practical point there. But, man, you got two young ladies who are very close to you and have been. You want them to know your God, right? And you would think that she would try to talk them into going, staying with her. And even if they push back, you'd think that. That's kind of what occurred to me.
But the short-term, quick way for them to be taken care of is to go back to their parents.
Exactly. Yeah. And
the long term, like with Janet.
Exactly. So we go back to these We go back to these questions. Was it spiritually or physically driven? Seems like that was a more physically driven or earthly driven motive to get him to go back. Terry said, Ruth deciding to stay with Naomi is the marquee decision here that meets all the tests. She did what she should be and actually talked her into staying. And then makes this beautiful speech that, of course, is read at weddings. But it fits. I mean, the words fit. It's not in context. And then Naomi decides to view her plight as God's doing. I think happiness is a choice, so... You know, she went through a bitter period. I don't think Naomi was a bitter person. Otherwise, I don't think Orpah and Naomi would have wanted to stay with her. But she was. She did go through, obviously. She just lost her husband and sons. She's back now. She's back and says, this has been a bitter period in my life. And we understand that. So I just said this. She decides to view her plight as God's doing. The reason I put that up there is because just because she... can disagree with me if you think I'm wrong. Just because she says God has done this to me, does that mean he did?
No.
Remember in John 9, what do the people say about the blind man? Who sinned?
Was it the child sin that he was born blind because of the child? Was it his own sin or was it the sin of his parents?
Exactly.
Jesus said neither.
Yeah. And that was a Jewish view. If something went bad, they said, well, you know, it must be due to sin or something we did. And so we can understand that the culture there and the thing. I don't know if that goes all the way back to Ruth, but certainly that's the way she looks at it. It may be. We don't know. This introduces the problem of providence. Providence is an issue that is very difficult because we don't know all the time when God is acting overtly in a situation or letting things take place, and then he uses people perhaps in those places. That's a big question that we're not going to talk about tonight. But decisions just define life, right? I mean, pretty much. And I've got kind of a hierarchy of sins of decisions that I came up with. Genesis, let's look at a couple of these other passages just for a minute. Does anybody know what happens in Genesis 4 in that passage? Just as you...
Cain and Abel.
Cain's angry at Abel, right? Because God had respect for Abel's sacrifice, not for Cain's. And in verse 6, the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why is your face fallen? So he was pouting pretty severely here. And he says, so here's, he's standing kind of at the threshold, right? He's got a decision to make. This is a humongous one, a very big one. But he says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. It's desirous for you, but you must rule over it. So he stood at that moment in time when he could have done the right thing. He had, can you imagine that every time you were tempted that God actually spoke to you and gave you the option? We're told in 1 Corinthians 10:13, you know, that talks about giving a way of escape. I mean, so you've got that moment of whenever that you can escape it to, as you're trying to make a decision. But in this case, he has that there, and of course, he fails to do the right thing, and that decision cost him dearly. Clearly, we understand. We could go through, and it would be a productive quarter to spend, maybe, and go through, look at decisions that people make in the Bible, the Bible characters have made, from, you know, David and on the rooftop to just a host of things that we could talk about, and the world changes in some cases because of these decisions, and of course the people do, and people around them are affected by their decisions. So, 1 Kings 18:21. What's that? Elijah. How long will you halt between two opinions? Yeah, you know, telling the people to, you know, choose one. Who's you going to serve, and why do you wait? So, you know, urging people at some point, that was an urgent and important decision that they needed to make in that case. Here's what I came up with in terms of how we might look at these, at the decisions we make. And I might have left out something. I was just kind of doing this off the top of my head, just thinking about this. But we have the routine decisions. Name, what are some routine decisions that we make that really...
What to eat?
Yeah. Well, not even what to eat. I'm not even there yet. Just to eat, right? To eat. Okay, I'm going to eat. I don't think about that. These are almost like thought. There's no thought hardly in this. I'm gonna eat and drink. I'm gonna put on clothes. I'm gonna go to work. I'm gonna do things that I do. I'm gonna put my kids into bed at night. And they're just like things you do, and they're just routine things. Then if you go to what I call second level routine, would be okay. What am I gonna eat? I like to use the illustration or just the real life problem that we face or decision we face, just how to cook your food, right? I mean, how many devices do you have in your house that cook food? You have a microwave? Oven? Convection oven, probably. Oven, convection oven. Instapot? You know, maybe a slow cooker. You know, you can go through a whole series of things. And you get into these second level things where you're saying, not, okay, what are we going to eat? We're going to eat. That's routine. But what are we going to eat? Those kinds of things. There's a lot of those types of stuff.
There's at least one study, Dave, that says we make 35,000 decisions a day.
Really? 35,000?
5-year-olds make about 3,500.
Wow.
So you might find that interesting.
Well, I don't.
Most of them are not of consequence.
Fortunately.
Say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's okay. Well, this kind of stuff, right? I mean, it includes all this basic stuff that we don't even give a whole lot of thought to. We might decide to go out to eat, those kinds of things. Let me get into the potentially life-altering. Potentially life-altering diseases. What would that be? What would some of those kind of... I say potentially life-altering. Can you think of a decision you made that might be potentially life-altering?
Where to move.
Okay, where to move. Good. Okay, so you get, maybe you have to move or you decide to move, and where you move might be life-altering. In what way? What might happen?
The friends you choose.
The friends that might be in the area you move? The nature of the schools, maybe? the nature of the area itself.
The
church, certainly the church. One person moved here and he had a compass. Is that right? With the pencil and the pointer and the pencil, is that right? And he took a map and he said, "We're looking for a house." And he put the pointer on the church building here, and then he had 2 inches on the map, which took him about a 2 mile radius. I don't know if it was 2 inches, whatever it was, 2 mile radius, and then he drew a circle. He says, "I'm buying a house somewhere in there." Because we want to be able to invite people over and have it and be close and all that kind of thing. I was very impressed by that. We don't live 2 years. You know. We live 10 miles away or 8 miles, or whatever it is. So those, but where you live, what school you go to, what those kinds of things, they may not be life altering in the sense that decision itself. They might be fine with that. Spending your money on something could put you in a bad place if you spend it incorrectly, potentially. You see, I'm getting there. What are some common life-altering decisions? This is even a little easier.
Marriage.
Yeah.
Job.
What job you choose? Decision to have kids. How many kids you decide to have?
Friends
you choose, those kinds of things. Those are common, and they we all know. Somebody said you'd be the same person you are 5 years from now. You'd be the same person you are, except for the books you read and the people you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense, that we are changed by the things that we, these decisions. And they're always life-altering in some way. These have in common. We have imposed decisions, and I also word this, but decisions that are imposed on you.
Health.
Yeah. Okay. Now you've got some decisions to make if you have a certain health issue, right? That would be a common one. These would be the chance. Ecclesiastes 9:11. Time and chance happen to all.
I couldn't help but think of the people who were affected by the fires.
Natural disaster comes in, and all of a sudden your life has just changed just like that. It's imposed on you. Now you've got decisions to make. You had no, the day before, you had no idea you were going to make that decision, right? And these are the ones, these are the scary ones. So in Elimelech's case, and his family, you had the famine come in. It was a natural disaster kind of situation. That was imposed on him. Presumably, obviously, if the famine hadn't happened, he wouldn't have moved to Moab. He would have stayed where he was. But that was an imposed decision on him, or at least that's the way he looked at it, and he took the choice to move. Those are the things that really alter our life in many cases, obviously, because they're things that happen all at once. And then there's the momentous life-altering decisions. What are those? What are the things that just rock your world, I guess you'd say? Have you had anything? Anybody want to share anything that?
Well, I was just listening to a podcast today where Maria Sharapova almost was evicted, and then that was a life-altering thing.
Okay, right.
That was interesting.
That's sort of what I'm getting at, is things that, you know, these ones we decisions we make, we pick, and are these ones that are imposed on us, we do what we can. We make the decision based on that. But certain things happen to us that if you go through your life, you're all kind of at least sort of middle-aged, right? A little above. I mean, so you can go back in your life, you can see, well, if I hadn't done this, I wouldn't be here, right? Anybody say that? I mean, if you hadn't made a decision over here, anybody write exactly where you thought you'd be 20, 30, 40 years from now? You did something that brought you to this place. I mean, I'm not going to do it, but I could go through some stuff starting probably from high school. And I remember my parents moved out when I was in college. My parents moved away. And then that kind of started a series of events. And then you have all these little twists and turns that bring here. I found out about 2 years, I think I told you this, but I found out about 2 years after I was hired here, that the meeting I held in September before I came here in May, Bill Mosley asked me to come and preach a meeting here over in the little building, and I did. About 2 years later, I found out that I was a substitute for somebody. And when I got home, I'm feeling sorry for myself. I was thinking, that's going to blow that one. Oh, I wasn't the first choice, you know. I just thought about that. That's kind of weird, you know, because that's the only reason I'm here. I would not be here, for better or worse. I would not be here if that hadn't happened. It would have been, life would have gone some. Who you married? My dad moves to Turlock, California, of all places, from Kalinga, of all places, to Turlock and preaches for the church there. Chris meets Christy's parents. Christy's parents and them get together. But how did he decide to move to Turlock? There was nothing in Turlock. There was no reason for him to go there other than that's where he chose to go. You know, that's what I mean. These momentous life alters are these things that if that hadn't happened, your whole life would have gone a different direction. And it happens to everybody. And it's not always in our control. That's the point. These things aren't always in our control.
So it sounds like these momentous life-altering decisions often are one of those other, what we think is just a common, you know, whether it's friends you make or whether it's an imposed decision or whatever. And we don't know that it's life-altering until we are looking back.
Right, right.
Usually. Often, at least.
Yeah, and it affects you. Can look. It usually is looking back and maybe somebody else's decision. So if Elimelech hadn't moved to Moab, this whole story of Ruth doesn't happen, right? I mean, we're reading some other thing. We're doing it. It doesn't happen. And, you know, to the degree which God calls all that, I've always felt that if it didn't work for this person, God's going to make it work for somebody else. So, you know, his plan was going to be done. But that decision affected her. And he looks back and says, well, I'm here because of this. So we've all got these things. And I think it's profitable for us to think through these kinds of things and try to communicate these things to people we mentor, whether they're our kids or people who are around, the importance, the critical importance of decision. Sometimes it seems like a little decision, and it may be much bigger than we think.
Yeah? I mean, that's what I was going to say. That's Elimelech. I mean, the way it's written is it seemed like he intended it to be a temporary. They sojourned there. So it's going to be a temporary thing, probably, you know.
Right. Yeah.
What was probably overanalyzed and thought that's the best decision, but it's only going to be for a little bit, and then we'll come back, and you just never know what those kind of decisions are going to do in your life. Yeah.
In that case, that decision, even if it didn't meet the test of those three things or whatever you want to put on that, the faith test, turned out to be for the good of everyone, right? As it turned out. It's tighter.
Maybe this is somewhat related to what Ben said, but you know, what occurs to me is that those routine decisions made day in, day out, right? Maybe second level, maybe not.
Yeah, probably the second
right
level.
Now, but,
yeah.
Every one of those has the potential to be momentously life-altering, right? If you, day in, day out, are making the right decisions and you're creating the right habits, then when it turns out that there's a decision that later on ends up being a momentously life-altering decision, you've got to have been doing the right things initially at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because that's, if we get kind of, if we look at it that way and actually think about that, now we're thinking about that decision-making process and that we actually are making a decision that may seem somewhat minor, but if even in those little things, if we do what Letitia said, if we think, well, where's God in this? Is God in the picture when we're doing this? Certainly they become bigger for those of us who are in the body of Christ, because if we move somewhere, if we send our kids to be educated somewhere, it shouldn't be just about, I think you all agree, it shouldn't just be about the kind of education they can get in the secular world's view. It should be about how this is going to affect their young minds as they go through this 4-year, 5-6-year process, however long they're there, right? I mean, it's not just, okay, I'm making go to Stanford and we get all worked up. Well, that might be the best place, but I'm just saying that we're going to put a completely different level and layers of considerations on that decision, right?
Sorry, I'm just laughing. I saw Brian Bird do this.
I did too.
Yeah. Well, he's a survivor because he went to Cal.
Yeah,
Berkeley. I'm really impressed with Brian. I mean,
by the way, CSU Stanislaus is in Turlock.
Yes.
And above the bottom 10% of all schools. So I just want to mention
there's something there. The 11th percent.
That's good to know.
All right, I'm gonna move on.
That's good to know.
Being silly.
All right, so I think you get the idea with that. Whoops, I think I'm going backwards. Wait. Oh, any other thoughts? I kind of want to talk about the decision-making role. God, we got about 10 minutes. But any other thoughts with all that? I think we made some good points. What else? Anybody here want to share a decision that they made? I mean, it might be interesting for a story or two, not too many. But
I made a...
Go ahead. Go ahead, Karen.
I've made quite a few. When my husband passed away, mm-hmm. I had to make a decision. What was I going to do with three young children? Then I had an opportunity to either move to Arizona or Sacramento. And the first thing I did was to find out where a church was. Mm-hmm. And then I found out tried to find a good school. And the third was to find a place to live. So those were really scary times. Mm-hmm. And the congregation where I was, I didn't know anyone here in Sacramento. And they told me about Scott. So I just made a blind call to Scott. And I didn't know anything about Scott, and I spoke with his wife, and we set up a meet, and I came to Sacramento, and they helped me find a place. So that was really a scary time.
Yeah.
And several life-altering decisions I had to make, and alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So... here I am today, and you know the rest of the story.
We're blessed that you're here, too, for sure. Ben, what were you going to say?
Well, I like sharing story.
It's hard to beat that.
I know. I was going to observe that some. It seems I feel young, still young, where I haven't had a lot of those huge life-making decisions. But then I think about it, there has been some. But being grounded in faith helped me make the decision, which was groundbreaking. Like when the one I was thinking of is when the doctor told us, hey, we've all met and we recommend that you abort your pregnancy with Nolan because of the issues. He had multiple issues. And I think a lot of people, that's a life-altering, what do we do in this decision? And for whatever reason, for us, it wasn't, because it was like there wasn't a choice. It was... at that point, our faith was that's the decision we needed to make. And I don't know if that's where you're going, but it's interesting when I think of the life-altering decisions that I've had. It seems like after thinking about it and having a good, strong faith, or whether it's confronting family members or whatever, it's always felt, it didn't feel so life-altering. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, you said so. I don't know if this is totally what you're getting at, but you said something very important, and that is that a lot of these things we're calling decisions, you get to a point where you don't have a decision. You don't have a choice, because we're going to serve God, right? I mean, and so, and I think that comes in...
Maybe that's why it wasn't really a choice.
Really a decision. Yeah, but it's being presented to you as one, mm-hmm. But you said, no, this is off the table. This isn't even something I have to decide. The only thing you have to decide in those cases is how to tell them, you know, and try to do it in maybe even a way that would be instructive to them or something, but not the decision itself. I think that's a really important point. And again, if somebody can train your kids to think that way and to be so well versed in at least the basics of things and what the value of human life and from God's standpoint and how He looks at it and those kinds of things, then they grew up not having those decisions to make. They've already made. Their decision is already made. That's like, you know, whether you're going to go to services on Sunday or something like that, right? I mean, it's made.
I like the way Tish put that, though. I thought that was a good way to say it, because I hadn't thought about saying it exactly that way.
Yeah.
But how does God fit into that decision?
How does God fit into it? Yeah.
I like that.
Sometimes we turn the, if you go back to that hierarchy thing, just a minute, I'll get back to, sometimes, I guess what, we sometimes want to, we kind of flip that thing, you know, so we're making all the, these decisions become the big ones for us, the ones, the almost routine decisions, and when we need to realize that every decision can be a huge one.
Sometimes if you make a poor decision and you let your child make a decision that you know is a poor decision and they suffer certain consequences, then they go, that's not something I want to choose again.
Right.
So sometimes we just have to let them make a decision.
Yeah, and that's...
Not one that's going to affect their spirituality, but something that they need to decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's part of forming their own faith.
And that's kind of what I was thinking too, but even in spiritual matters, I think it's important that we teach our kids that even when we make poor decisions, that doesn't seal our fate. There is still more decisions to make, and you can make. You don't have to keep making bad decisions. Lot was in, you know, Sodom, and he had made a bad choice, but later he made the choice to leave and listen to what those angels told him to do.
That's the value of, it's kind of alluded to, the fact that you could do a whole quarter on it, because you could just go through, a lot of the Bible character, either sermon series or classes we do are based on that. If you, sometimes they're not looked at that way, but they're decisions these people made. And learning from the decisions and the fact how they came out of it or stayed with it or whatever they did, the negative or positive lessons that we learned from the choices they made. Tyler?
I don't know, this is kind of an awkward one to tell, but because my wife's parents are here. But when I was about 19 or 20 years old, I was always a believer, but at about 19, 20 years old, I was dating a girl who wasn't a member of the Church of Christ. And, you know, I was questioning a lot of things. And I think, had conversations about these things when I was around 20, 21 years old. And, I was maybe going to move to Colorado and go to the University of Northern Colorado and wrestle there. And she had a scholarship there also. And my dad wrote me a letter. He made a decision to write me a letter saying, I want you to know, here's how things are going to change if you keep going down this path. And that forced me to make a decision as well. And so I have no doubt my parents would have followed through with what they had to do if I chose to go down a certain path. And my dad had to make that call, and it was a moment of choosing for me. And I really had to consider what my life's priorities were going to be and what I really believed.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really an eye-opener for me that he did that.
And the key that you knew he would follow up, that's the key to that. Right. Yeah. Interesting. See, we all have stories that are... And I think it's good for us to go through those because, again, it helps us evaluate the decisions we make. I think it's easy to kind of get into this place where we are and get into the kind of the routine of life and kind of think we're going to and kind of put our faith on cruise control and that we just kind of ride in, you know, when the time comes. And we're not, and then we're, I think in that case, we're probably avoiding decisions and because we're smoothing. We avoid the more difficult ones, like what do I say to a family member or someone who really needs the gospel and I know it and I just can't, and, you know, we kind of take the path of least resistance. And decisions, sometimes the decisions I've made in my past have often and inadvertently sometimes led me to really tough spots in my life. Places at all, which I learned from, you know, but you can make decisions that to avoid those kinds of things as much as possible. The only exception, I think, on that list I had was the ones that are imposed on you. That is kind of when life kind of caves in on you, and then what do you do? And maybe that would be good. That'd be good. You know, I think we could all acknowledge that there's some value in that. when things don't go well. I remember I got fired and tried to pawn Christie's wedding ring one time. It got so bad. I mean, you don't forget that stuff, and you don't forget, you say, I'm not going back there again. I don't want that. That's not a spiritual decision or anything. It's just one that you learn from, that kind of thing. And it turns out that you look back and those things are helpful. That happened because I made another decision. That was okay decision, but that's what happened.
We kind of opened that can up a little bit on Sunday, and somebody else brought it up. Maybe it was Brett or somebody, that decisions kind of bring out who you really are in those tough times.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, it kind of exposes who you are and what you're made out of, really, you know.
I remember, but with that in mind, I rented a truck because in Stockton or San Joaquin County back then, I was going to get welfare. And the way they did it, they gave you big, big sacks of rice and grain and stuff. That's what they did. They just didn't hand you money and stuff. And I remember getting a truck. I'm going to go down there and get this stuff. And I looked at it. I said, I just can't do this. You know, it's just, that's probably pride and all that. But I just made the decision not to. And then actually everything kind of started going up from that point, but you just kind of get to the rock bottom, and that's sometimes where your decisions are made that are most valuable. So, all right, so chapter 2, there's lesson sheets up here, and we'll pick up from there.